You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
And then Grandma came in, she had suffered a stroke, and they shot her.
Get ready for the Social Hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas. And this is the Social Hour. On today's show, host of the Kevin Crater podcast, Kevin Crater. And now your host. He'll never be able to run for president because he only has two felonies. Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Welcome back, guys. Thank you for coming back for another episode. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. I know I took a couple weeks off, but I'm back in studio. I was traveling, and I'm wrapping up the end of this super secret project that's kind of secret depending on how much you follow me. But I'll have more announcements about that in the next couple weeks. But we're back with a new episode for you this week. Before we get into that, guys, real quickly, go to deesecomedy.com. Check out all the shows across the nation, across the network. We have lots of great social hour comedy events happening all over the country. So check the calendar. We're working on updating the website to get the calendar easier for everyone to kind of check out shows and aggregate in their area and find stuff going on. But we've got shows in Pasco, Washington, Rockport, Washington, San Marcos, Texas, Natchez, Washington, and more this week. And then next week, we're going to be all through Washington, Texas, and some other spots. So, and I will be back on the road for a weekend in Houston area next weekend, the 19th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. I'll be in Galveston, Houston, Katy, and Pearland. So come check that out, guys. There's some tickets left for some of those shows. The Galveston show, I think, might be sold out. Katy might be sold out. Now the other ones, there's still some tickets available. So, you got limited chances to catch me through June and July doing dates on the road, but come August, you'll see me back hitting it. I'm going to be all over the Northwest again, be in the Dallas area, California later this year and more. So, just go to deesecomedy.com, check out the dates, get your tickets, come see me. I got new jokes, new stuff, and, new announcements coming soon, but, enough of that. You know the commercials. You know where to follow me. You do follow me. We're going to get into it with our guest today. He comes to us from Michigan. Where in Michigan? I don't know, but we're going to find out. He is the host of the Kevin Crater Show. And welcome, Kevin Crater. Kevin, how you doing, man?
Thanks, Deese. Good. I'm well. You?
Yeah, good. Thanks for doing this. So I guess we did talk a minute before the mics heated up here. You are in Michigan. Where in Michigan are you?
Southeast Michigan. So I'm about an hour southwest of Ann Arbor, Detroit area. So I'm right above the border of Ohio.
Oh, okay. Right on.
Yeah. So we're not the frigid North Michigan. We have 100 in the summer and negative whatever in the winter. So we've got it all.
Yeah. You got those true four seasons.
Yes, we really do.
So yeah. Are you, have you always lived in Michigan?
I have. Yeah. I grew up an hour from here, just the next county west. So I grew up in Hillsdale, Michigan, acclaimed and known for Hillsdale College, amongst a couple other things. But yeah, that's what it's known for.
Okay. I gotta say, I don't know. Michigan might be one of the states I don't know if I've ever been in this union of ours.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
We can buy some time. There's a lot of comedy in Ohio, and Toledo is just right over the border from us, and there's a few good Toledo, a few comedy shops in Toledo. So
I run a few shows in Hamilton, Ohio.
Okay,
I don't know how far that is from you, but
it's near Columbus, is it?
It's kind of southwest Ohio.
Okay, so yeah, probably about 3 hours or so.
Yeah, it's I mean, I've been through Minnesota and Indiana and Ohio and skipped all around you, just dodged. Dodged
there's this huge somehow. There's this huge thing in the way of like Wisconsin and Michigan, yeah. Huge body of water that they haven't built a bridge over yet. So I understand going around and not going up into.
Yeah, you just get out and avoid Canada. So going that
that's
far.
That's good
up.
Policy.
So you, what do you do out there? I mean, you host this podcast, and how long have you, it's the Kevin Crater Show. How long have you been doing that for?
Oh, we're coming up on a year.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Not too long, kind of a newbie. I just put out episode 55. So a little more than one a week, which was my goal, one a week. So yeah, we talk about everything from politics, recent events, and I like to interview people about strange things. Kind of, if it's interesting, I want to talk about it.
it's such a tough topic, you know. Tough. It's just so ambiguous, you know, because I'm always looking for interesting guests, also. But interesting to me is it might be wildly different compared to most other people.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. I'm a little ADD. So I can't do one thing all the time. Like I can't talk about politics every episode. I'm just like, you know, I think about it enough. I don't need to talk about it every time. So do politics one day and then I'll talk about cats the next week and then we'll go back to politics. And so.
Well, yeah. Not to hammer on that if this is the off week for politics.
So I'm game anytime.
What is Michigan? Are they, or where you're at, or Michigan in general? Is it, you know, blue, red, purple? Yeah. What's Michigan?
It's been real back and forth lately. So Trump won the state in 2016 and lost it in 2020.
Okay.
So yeah, we've had a Republican. Honestly, it goes back and forth all the time. It really is purple. We get Republican governor, Democrat governor, like just bouncing back and forth.
Yeah.
It's a huge union state. Obviously the auto industry started here in America. So it's very blue in that sense, but Trump has swung a lot of blue collar traditional union workers, people in my family who were Democrat their whole life. As soon as Trump came along, they're just like, he's our guy.
Yeah. Oh, I lost you. Something happened. The Illuminati is heard Trump's name mentioned, and they started shutting. They're preemptively demonetizing the show before we've even aired it. There we go. Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like Minority Report pre-crime.
I don't think we're far from that. So. But anyway.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, Trump has changed a lot. Yeah. I think he'll get this state again this time because our psychotic governor, Whitmer, is she's evil. That's all I can say about her. She didn't want people to go down the seed aisle of stores during COVID. I don't know. I thought maybe seeds contained extra COVID. I don't know.
The seed and aisle?
Literally. She said you couldn't go down the seed aisle when it was like springtime and people would go buy seeds for their garden. She said you couldn't do that.
Was it just because, what was the thought? I mean, there's got to be like a, you know, when these decrees come down from these totalitarian regimes like this, which is, you know, here's the thing. I'll just be frank with you because all my listeners know, anyone who knows me knows. Like I'm a staunch libertarian. I'm basically like a Ron Paul libertarian. That's kind of my that's where I fall in. So when, you know, when people talk about, you know, it's always like an alateral conversation because when people are talking about politics, it's binary for them. And I'm like, oh no, I'm not one of your two rows. I hate them both equally. But you know, when these totalitarian dictators like that start giving these decrees of, oh, you can't get on the seed aisle, you think there has to be some pushback of like, at least why, you know, what is the reasoning behind it?
I honestly don't remember it. There was so much going on during that time, obviously. And our governor was particularly egregious in her edicts
Yeah.
And I mean, it was like, okay, well, you have no idea what you're doing now. You're just making stuff up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fuck, they all were. Geez. I mean, you certainly, especially I don't know if you followed these congressional hearings with Fauci at all recently and all the stuff that's coming out, you know, essentially they just kind of made up the 6-foot rule. There was no science. But there's no science behind any of this stuff. That's what comes out is there's no science. With all these people that are screaming, trust the science for 4 years straight and saying that, you know, if you didn't get vaccinated and you get sick, you just deserve to die. Those tolerant, you know, the tolerant people, quote unquote, they were screaming trust the science for 4 years, and now when the science, like, oh yeah, we just made that up, there's no backpedaling of like, oh whoops, you know, maybe don't trust the science all the time.
Well and that, and they just want to like forget it ever happened.
Yeah,
like, dude, you ruined years of people's life.
Yeah,
you threw sick people into nursing homes and got other people sick. Like, we're just like, let's just forget it happened and move on. When you know that very well, they want to do it again the next time this happens.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, you know, it depends on how far you want to go down the conspiracy rabbit hole. But it really goes to show you that how easily that the populace is manipulated and controlled and willing to sell out their neighbor. You know, I mean, they were giving away hey, we'll give you a free Jamba Juice and a Krispy Kreme if you tell us who you haven't seen get their fifth booster. It's like, how much more Third Reich bootlegging, if Anne Frank in the attic, are we going to... are we going to get in this country that really... And people are getting, like, joy out of it. They're getting like a joy out of this telling on someone who didn't get their vaccine or was going out to the park during the day when they should have been inside. It's
really amazing what happened. People are just like, yes, government, please, more. And I'll never forget this. I was in Walmart with, I think I had all three of my kids with me, just grocery shopping on a, you know, Saturday or whatever. And I never did any of the masking. I never followed the arrows on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, I'll not do that if at all humanly possible. And this old guy saw me there with no mask, all three of my kids, no mask. And he just accosted me. He's like, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
I have to wear this mask. You should too. And like,
yeah, you don't have to wear that mask.
I know. That's my thing. You don't have to, bro.
Yeah,
I just walked away because it's not worth it. It's not worth engaging in people that don't want to think for themselves.
Yeah,
it was really an astonishing time. So, but yeah, and then the whole FedNapping plot against Whitmer. I'm sure you heard about it.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing was made up. I mean, it was more feds than it was normal people.
What was it, like 10 out of 12 of them were federal agents or something like that? Or was it 12 out of 14 of them? Something crazy. It was
something like that.
They're only
a
like,
ridiculous amount.
Yeah, there were double digits of people and only two of them were not feds. I know that. So like,
it was like two or three, I think. But two of the people were charged and they pled not guilty and the judge ended up throwing it out because it was so horrible what the government, the feds did to these guys. I mean, and then one didn't face any charges, I don't think, but basically they were, so Michigan, particularly the area I am in, has a strong history of militia activity.
Okay.
There was probably, I think in 2010, in my county, there was a plot, and this one appeared to be real. I don't know of any government involvement. We've never heard of any, though. But some guys were planning on killing a police officer and then at his funeral setting off a bomb. So that was like more legitimate than what happened to Whitmer. So we have a strong, proud history of militia activity in our area.
Well,
and
you know.
So I think they used that as a cause to do it here.
Yeah.
Because of our history of it. And let's just say I grew up around a lot of good old boys
Yeah.
who had a lot of weaponry and you know, some of them were a little itchy to use that.
Ready to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. January 6th was celebrated, not first people.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, well, I mean, what happened at January 6th? A few people got a little rowdy on a tour of the Capitol, but
yeah. Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
put this on YouTube, do you?
No, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it's so funny. I was listening to some podcast the other day, and some guy, you know, they just kept referring to it as Insurrection Day, which
oh,
is just
word.
So it's just so inflammatory for no in you know, do I think that those people probably should have done some of the stuff they did? Probably not. Was it an insurrection? Was there at any point was there a thought that, oh, these 17 people might topple the American government? Like, you people are out of your minds. You know, it's crazy to think like that's, I mean, as much as I'm all for the Second Amendment, you know, when people are like, I keep these guns because I want to defend myself against my country. I'm like, I don't know if you know this, but if your country doesn't like you, like they can have a 19-year-old MIT student in Langley, Virginia, just press a button and on a video game and drop a bomb on your house. They'll Ruby Ridge your ass in a second. Like, there is no defending yourself against this country anymore. I don't care how many M16s you have.
Yes, so, I agree. And the thing about that insurrection talk, I'm like, dude, if you want to see an insurrection, like, I know people who would be glad to give you a real one. Like,
sure.
I grew up around these folks. Like, this was not an insurrection. If you really wanted one, I know people that would be happy to oblige. Like, and they don't want that either. I mean, nobody wants that. I don't want that. It's not a good idea because it's not going to end well. But to call January 6th an insurrection is, I mean, it's media. That's,
yeah.
It's just media.
Yeah. It, you know, well, when you see those videos of the federal agents or like the police officers opening the barricades and letting people in, you know, evidence of, you know, agent provocateurs in the crowd, you know, like they interviewed, oh, I don't remember who it was, someone from the FBI and one of the higher ups, and they were asking him in a court, in this court, like congressional hearing, maybe, you know, did you guys have agents in the crowd, you know, on January 6th? And he's like, I'm not at liberty to answer that question. Like, you know, you either do or you don't. If you don't, you say no. If you do and you don't want people to know, you have to say, I'm not at liberty to answer that. I think your non-answer answers the question.
So you're telling me yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is. Well, go ahead.
Are you familiar with Enrico Tarrio and his involvement?
The name doesn't ring a bell. But
I think it was him. Wasn't he leader of the Proud Boys? I think it was him.
Oh, leader of the Proud Boys was, I don't think that's Enrico. That's what's his name. Let's see.
Yeah, let's use the old Google.
Enrique Tarrio gets 22 years in prison for orchestrating far-right extremist group's attack on the U.S. Capitol. Oh, wow.
Okay. He wasn't who I was thinking of. There was one guy who basically was working with the feds. I forget his blanking on his
name
right now.
Yeah,
he...
What
it wasn't Enrico now. Now that I'm thinking about it.
Proud Boy members... What the hell? Oh, Gavin McGinnis.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed like he was doing some stuff and working with them, and he didn't get arrested or anything, I didn't think.
No. Yeah.
So that was a little suspect, shall we say?
Yeah. The whole thing stunk, obviously, and was just a good reason to, I think it's just another, another version. I mean, I hate to use the word like a psyop because that's not even the right word, but kind of like this test. How far can we push these people? How far can we manipulate them and get them to, because it allows for more control on the other end, you know, because like, oh, we have, this is for, it's always under the guise of safety. You know?
Oh, sure.
Like, this is safer. It's like the Patriot Act. Oh, this is safer for your safety. And you have Colin Powell on the floor of Congress shaking a vial of baking soda saying, oh, they got weapons of mass destruction, which they never did. And, you know, now they can, without cause, detain anyone indefinitely and never charge you. And, you know, and people are just fine with that.
Yeah, well, one thing I've been disgusted by since COVID is this, when you leave, like, so I go around my main job. I go around to a lot of businesses throughout the day, mm-hmm. service contractor, and see a lot of people. And I am so, like, at this point, I'm just sickened by it. This, when you leave, someone says, be safe, you know? I just like, quit telling me to be safe. Like, all of COVID was pretending to keep me safe.
Right.
Like, I don't want to be safe anymore. You've made me just so sick of that, that phrase, and all of it is about your safety when none of it was. And people are still just like, oh, be safe out there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because safety is the most important thing.
Well,
not being free to do what you want with your own time, your money and your resources, but being safe. I'll tell you, prisoners are safe inside a cell. Very safe.
Yeah, they just be easy. Yeah, they get food and water and a toilet, and they've got guards to surround them.
Go in there
and
if you want to be safe. Like, knock yourself out.
Well, here's the thing. Everyone says be safe, but statistically, the most dangerous thing you can do is get behind the wheel of your car every day. Literally, statistically, you are far more likely to get in a car accident and die than anything else you do in a day, then fucking anything. You know, you get COVID 7 times in one day and you're not going to, you could get anything, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's the most dangerous thing you can do, but yeah, people still do that and don't even blink an eye, you know?
Yeah. Well, obviously you wouldn't stop driving.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Even though it is the most dangerous thing you do. Well, so, yeah.
One of the
I remember I was in grocery store parking lot right when COVID was, like, probably, you know, summer of 2020, mm-hmm. when people were still just freaking out.
Yeah.
And this lady was, I was going in, this lady was done with her cart, and I said, I'll take that. And she says, you're not worried? I was like, no.
Yeah.
Just give it to me. You're in the sunlight, number one.
Yeah.
So, like, whoa, what are we doing here? so many absurd procedures. And I was, like I said, I service a lot of the businesses, and I was in every kind of institution, food processing, medical. Like, I saw things that just ran so contrary and counter to all of the rules that these businesses put in place, that pretty soon I was like, are we really serious about this?
Yeah.
Like, is this anything to worry about?
Yeah. But the craziest thing to me is that again, the people who, like, here's the thing. I give a lot of grace to the people who were scared at first, because it was unknown, unprecedented, something we've never dealt with in our lifetime. This crazy, like, oh, lockdown, this virus is, we, you know, and it just sounds crazy, and that's a scary scenario. But once the kind of data and information started rolling in, you could kind of see the fuckery in it pretty quick, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I just started being like, this is not, like, the first time they were like 2 weeks, and then they're like, oh, another week. And then when they came back and said another week, I looked at my friends, I go, this is going to be months. I go, they're just boiling a frog, you know. They just can't tell us 6 months right now, because we'd lose our shit, you know. They got to tell us a week at a time. But there's no, like, retroactively, no one ever stopped and updated their prism. They kept that original point of view and never altered it when new data came in. And that's something I really don't have a lot of grace for, you know. There's room to be wrong when you don't have all the information. But when you do get the information and you still hang on to retarded ideas, that's when we start to separate.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. The first 2 weeks, we were 2 weeks to slow the curve. Oh, my word. I hate even uttering that phrase.
Yeah.
But, and so I was like, well, like, let's see. okay, 2 weeks to figure things out. Okay, that's reasonable. I didn't think you should keep people from doing things, but I was like, okay, it's reasonable to tell people, hey, let's 2 weeks. But yeah, once you got past 2 weeks, like, oh, another month. Oh, another week, another 2 weeks. It's like, yeah, same thing. You said, like, okay, I see what's going on here.
Yeah.
This is not based in reality or facts.
Yeah.
You just are doing stuff. And yeah, but Fauci is science.
Right. Yeah, king of science, you know. Wow. I mean, the thing that blew my mind is, well, many things did, but like in LA, the one of the health commissioners of health down there, that was making decisions on what they're going to do, the regulations for COVID. They went to this outdoor dining thing, right? They were going to allow businesses to do outdoor dining. So these businesses spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to produce these outdoor dining that were to the specifications of the city. And then they're like, well, actually, no outdoor dining either. And then so they shut that down. And subsequently, LA lost more than 75% of their restaurants because of COVID. But later they asked, because this lady was pushed about it, you know, there was, she's like, well, what do you think? There was no science. There was no data, zero data showing proof of transmission outdoors. And her answer literally was, oh, it's not about data. It's about the optics.
Yep, I remember that.
So, and you're like, that's the moment that I feel like everyone should have just woken up and been like, oh, it's not about actual science or data. It's literally about, what does this look like? Does this make us look like we're doing the right thing? We want to look like we're doing the right thing. You know, it's like when Coca-Cola puts a black square on their, you know, on their Instagram handle for, you know, during the George Floyd protests or whatever. Mm. You're like, yeah, they still don't give a shit. You know, they're still going to pay near slave wages and sling you poison every day. They don't care. They don't care. You know,
yeah.
Apple literally uses slave labor to mine rare earth minerals. They don't give a shit about Pride Month. They give a shit. It's their bottom line they care about, you know. But people are just so dumb and dug in that they don't, you know, they don't make any alterations to their thought process.
No, and forget the point I was going to make on that. Yeah, it was out there in LA, I think, Hollywood or wherever they make movies out there, where didn't they have, like, right down the street from these businesses that couldn't do outdoor dining, they had, like, catering for the movie sets.
Oh.
Which was, like, outdoor dining.
Yeah.
there's a big tray of food. People went up and got it.
Yeah.
But they couldn't shut that down, obviously.
Right. Yeah,
no, but then, you can't stay open, Mr. Business Owner.
And then meanwhile, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is going to the French Laundry, his restaurant that he's part owner in, and eating indoors. Luckily, magically, the county that his restaurant was in got to open early. And have outdoor dining or indoor dining still. Amazing that real
life. Yeah, what are the chances?
Yeah, that COVID didn't hit there so as hard. So,
well, you had previously mentioned the evil governor of Michigan. She went out to eat with some folks and she had her picture taken, no mask on.
Yeah.
And she goes to Florida for a vacation in the thick of it. Where it's free and open, and she's having fun down there while she keeps everyone back home locked in. Like, this is what government does.
Yeah.
If there was any question about people, if you thought government had any goodwill towards you at all, let 2020 be a good example to you.
Right.
Like, if anyone was wondering, laboring under the misconception that government wants to look out for you and wants the best for you, just read the last 4 years. I don't know how anyone can trust these folks ever again.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest message. That's the biggest takeaway that is even scarier that people don't see that. Like, you know, again, to kind of circling back to the libertarian thing, every time I am critical of one side or the other, whether I'm criticizing Biden or Trump or whoever, someone automatically assumes, oh, you're of the other side. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I'm not of the other side. I also dislike that other side. What I'm astounded at is that there's still people that will champion one of these sides when blatantly and clearly they do not give a shit about us, and they don't, they are only serving their own needs. It's become so obvious on both sides what they're willing to do at the expense of the American people. Yet someone will still, you know, I mean, I understand not being a fan of Trump. I get it. I understand. Makes sense to me. What I don't understand is you trying to pretend that you think Biden is a good candidate for president. Like, you don't, just tell me, just be, because then I'm like, are you stupid or are you a liar?
Yeah.
Because if you're this stupid, that's dangerous. We need to revoke your driver's license. Like, this is, you should not be voting anyway. So it's, I just think people are so dug in and ready to lie to themselves just to feel, I don't know, feel good about themselves.
Hey, well, Trump derangement syndrome is very real, and it will make people do things that they otherwise wouldn't normally do, vote for a senile old man for president.
Yeah.
And maybe we can get into voting and everything, but I've, just this episode this last week that came out, I vociferously and enthusiastically am voting for Trump, even though I would consider myself a libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
What happened at the Libertarian Convention, I don't know if you're familiar with all that shenanigans that happened there. Chase Oliver, mm-hmm. and that just, there's no option there. So the only option is Trump. Like, I'm sure you saw Biden at the D-Day ceremonies in France this past week.
Yeah, yeah.
He was supposedly, some people are saying, well, he was having an accident on stage, and good thing he was wearing a diaper. But what struck me even more, like, let's say that was the case, but what was the other, let's say that wasn't happening. Number one, he can't stand for like 10 minutes.
Right.
This is the leader of the free world who can't stand on his own for any amount of time. And those 95-year-old World War II veterans that were behind him, that went through World War II, that are older than him, dude, I think they're looking at him like, are you okay, bro? Like,
yeah.
Like, those guys are doing better than he is.
Yeah.
Like, this is elder abuse. It's been said before. This is a guy who, if he was your grandpa, you'd feel bad when you went and visited him in the home.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things, too. It's like, I think it just goes to show that, you know, you have to be at least 35 to be president, right? I feel like we should be at like a maximum of 65. We need a cutoff there also. Someone was talking about how I heard that if we have like a nuclear attack, like say Russia shot nukes at us, in the middle of the night, they would have to wake, if they woke Biden up immediately, he has less than 30 seconds to make a decision on what we're doing, right? I imagine the process to wake that guy up takes hours anyway.
So and like, drugs.
Yeah. You have 30 seconds, we are screwed.
Oh boy.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not confidence inducing to watch him do anything. And like, let's be honest, the fact that we have two 80-year-olds basically as the top candidates says a lot about our country.
Yeah, these are their two best.
Yeah, there's fantastic young people. I was a real fan of Vivek Ramaswamy. I thought he was like, I know he's no libertarian, but like he was saying all the right things.
Yeah.
Like, cut federal workforce by 3/4. Like, let's go, man. You're my guy. But
yeah.
And he's in his 30s, so there are younger people. But the Democrats, like, who do they have? The diversity hire of Kamala Harris?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Who else? I mean, Gavin Newsom.
That's the guy. That's the guy they're grooming.
There's no one else.
He's the next guy on the ticket. I'd almost guarantee it. Well, here's my theory. I think they fully believe that Biden won't make it through another presidency. And I also think that, you know, that or whatever, the CIA just does their thing. And, you know,
possible.
You know, just night, night, sleepy time. You want to, yeah, you want to go on this tour of Dallas. And they, what they want to do is they want, because they know no one would ever elect Kamala Harris. I don't even think the people would. She's less likable than Hillary Clinton, which is somehow unfathomable. But she, and they've just hidden her away. I mean, they have hidden Kamala Harris away. But she, I think what they want to do is they want Biden to, that's why they're running him again. They're going to, he'll win. He's not going to make it through this presidency. They can put in Kamala Harris, who will be their the first woman and the first fan of color president. Look what we did. We're so great. Also, she's dumb as a box of rocks, easy to control. They can still do whatever they want. And, you know, they'll basically, you know, puppet for a couple years while she's, you know, and then boot her and then bring Gavin Newsom on for the next ticket.
No. I think that's about as plausible as any theory I've heard. What the Democrats have a plan, because it looks like they have nothing, and it seems like the Obamas or the Obama's team are running things behind the scenes at the White House.
Yeah,
because you know Biden isn't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they did it to themselves, and it just goes to show with, you know, even on the Republican ticket too, the Republican side, they're not really looking in. That's what frustrates me too. When you talk to people, and they're like, "Well, you know, it's the lesser of two evils," or "It's better." You start talking about Biden, and then they just go, "Well, it's better than Trump." And you're like, "Yeah, but shouldn't you be able to look your party leaders in the eyes and say, give me better, give me what I want, give me something that is realistic?" Because you're just accepting that, and when you lay down and die and just accept it, they're going to keep giving you garbage. The DNC blocked most other candidates from even being on the primary tickets in most states. They weren't even allowing you to vote for other options. It's like they didn't give you an option. They just said, it's Biden again, deal with it. And that is not democracy. That is a totalitarian government. That is a dictatorship. And if you're willing to sit there and allow your party to do that, you've already given up any hope of living in a democracy or a republic, really, is what we essentially were.
So are you voting for Trump then, or do you still unknown?
Here's my problem, Kevin. I understand your point of view. It's the lesser of two evils thing. You know, and my problem is, couple elections ago, I've been a libertarian, consider myself a libertarian for a long time, but I have voted for major political parties because of that whole, you know, essentially waste a vote type of thing. And there was one election where I voted for a major political party, and then because of the lesser of two evil rang in my ears, and it got me that election. And it's haunted me ever since, because I didn't feel good about casting that vote. But I chose the lesser of those two, and I promised I would never do that again. Even if it means a quote unquote wasted vote. But I think the more that it's like, that's the poison in the water. Because if the establishment can make you believe that there's no hope to get out of those two, they can keep us in that. But the more that people break out of that and do vote for that third party, whatever it is, I don't care what you vote for, but break out of that and start to take away those votes from the major political parties, it's the only hope of, and even then a small hope, of some sort of shift in the system, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely sympathize and understand with your line of thinking there. I've been there myself. But what they have done to Donald Trump is so egregious. And he drives them crazy like no one I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
And so I want to encourage that sort of behavior. You know,
yeah.
Like the media hates him. the big government hates him. So I'm like, well, this is like, I got no one else. Like I said, the libertarian candidate is a joke.
Let's touch on that for a second, because I've been a little out of touch. I actually interviewed Chase Oliver a couple months ago. So I've done a lot of work with the Libertarian Party. So usually most elections, last election cycle, I interviewed Jo Jorgensen, spent a day with her. She impressed me a lot. Here's the problem with libertarian candidates, though. Libertarianism is such a catch-all that it's such a wide net where you can be a libertarian and have wildly different ideals than the guy standing next to you in the libertarian. Yep. So it's tough. It's because the idea of it is we are open to anyone's ideas, but then that also allows anyone's ideas to permeate this party. So it makes it, mm-hmm. there's a lot of challenges there. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the, even kind of the general mantra of libertarianism that I disagree with a little bit. You know, I think we need an FAA and things like that. Like, I don't think we can away with any type of federal administration. Like the IRS, things like that, I think we could probably adjust that. I do think we need someone to monitor in some way. We can make adjustments, you know. But tell me what happened with Chase Oliver that soured it for you.
Number one, I've heard a few. Now, I'd be happy to being dissuaded from my views if I hear more information, sure. Like we talked about with COVID. But I've heard a couple things. He's opened borders. He was okay with businesses placing mandates on their employees. So as our current system goes right now, I'm not for open borders because we have government programs. If we didn't have any government programs at all, I'd be like, okay, free market, if you want to come over here, come over. That's my view on borders. But I've heard things like that about him that I disagree with. Yeah. And the whole thing was Recktenwald was leading, and I'm not a huge Recktenwald fan. Like, he was okay. But I heard they kind of went around, like the vice president, his vice president said, if you throw in with me, I'll throw in with you, and that sort of thing. They kind of teamed up against Recktenwald, who was winning. Mm. And so, you know, I get it. It's politics. But
yeah.
Again, it's hard with the libertarians because, like you said, anyone can come in. The guy in the Speedo can just walk around and talk to people. You know, like it's a little like, oh, I don't want my kids there. But
yeah.
You know, so it's hard. But tell me, I'm wrong about Chase. I'd be happy to admit if I'm wrong.
Well, no, I mean, I don't want to say you're wrong, because you know that's especially given what you said. I mean, no, it's an opinion. It can't be wrong. You know, and not that I necessarily think his politics are perfect. And that's kind of in the minutiae that I hadn't really gotten into with him on some stuff. So it's good to know that. But I think he's a good guy. I think, it's not always the answer because there's no formal kind of policy for libertarians, you know. Where some are for open borders, some are for not. You know, personally, I think I don't like open border. I think I'm all for path to citizenship. I think there should be that, because the reality is, we're all migrants here, besides this choice few. And, you know, honestly, my dad's from Mexico. So, like, I believe in a path to citizenship. I don't like an open border. I'll tell you a quick tangent, side story. I have a buddy who is a comedian. He is of Mexican ethnicity, but he's actually Canadian. He's from Canada, born and raised in Canada. But you know, his family's Mexican. His name is Juan, you know,
typical Canadian name.
Yeah. And he, I had him, he technically basically lives in America in Seattle now, but, he has a work visa. So he has to go back and forth. And then he has family up there and he does shows up there. So he's back and forth across the border, probably, you know, 24 times a year. It has to go back every whatever 90 days at least for the visa, work visa, etc. Well, I had him booked for a show last week, in Eastern Washington, and he got stopped at the border and coming from Canada back into the U.S. and couldn't get in. He was there for 7 hours and ended up getting like an $1,100 fine because something was wrong with it, something off for his visa, and didn't make it to the show and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, man, if you were coming from that southern border, you would have no problem getting in.
Just
you know?
Walk right in.
And you could have, you know, and it's like that's the thing that boggles my mind. It's like you're going to – they're letting in they're closing the gate when they get to 2,500 people in a day. That seems
average.
That seems like a lot. That seems like a lot. And the crazy thing is, too, if you look at it statistically, over 80% of them aren't even Latino. They're not even Mexican or type of Latino. Most of them are like there's a lot of Middle Eastern, a lot of Chinese, a lot of Africans. Mm-hmm. So you're getting people from other countries who are using Central America as a way to get in to America. So, you know, they start talking about, you know, oh, you got to watch out for these Mexicans coming. It's like, no, it's not even the Mexicans coming across. It's it's over 80% of them are not even Latino. So
I didn't realize that was that high percentage.
Yeah.
None.
Wow. So it's crazy. So I mean, that's the thing that really is another thing about it that we have to watch out, because it's not even necessarily. I mean, you know, there's some of it. There's definitely some of it that's innocuous, where it's like they probably found out we can get in to America easy through the in there. You know, just trying to help their family, trying to get to a mm-hmm. better life or whatever. But you know, you don't think China has also figured that out. And figured out it's a sure shit is easy way to get some boots on the ground across the border.
Obviously they have, because there's a fair amount of Chinese.
Yeah.
So, I think it was Brett Weinstein. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Oh yeah.
I think it was him. He was on Joe Rogan, and he said he went down to the Dorian Gap there, where there's a gap in the road, and there's a whole Chinese encampment, and they wouldn't let him in to talk to people.
Yeah.
Like hundreds or thousands of Chinese people, they're just camping out.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a pit stop on the way, you know?
Yeah.
On the way. If it was just consistent one way or the other, mm-hmm. you know, I'd be happy with it. Like, just make up your mind. Either let people in or don't.
Yeah.
But this, like you said, this poor guy got stopped and then a fine, and like, and he's above board. It sounds like what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, if he was on the other side, he would just, well, stroll right through and be fine.
Right.
That's infuriating.
Yeah.
That can't stand.
Yeah. It's just literally, that's our bureaucracy at work. That's our tax dollars at work. And like, is that the system we want? Like, I always say, like, spirit of the law, letter of the law, you know? Like, I know, you know, it's like, we can't have one border where we're just letting people pour across, not giving a shit. And then the other border, people with, you know, a work visa who are coming across or legal status and da da da, you know, it's like, and you're going to stop them and fine them. And that, like, that's not the, he's a 27-year-old Latino comedian from Vancouver, BC. He's not the new face of Al-Qaeda. Like, we're gonna be okay, you know?
Yeah. But stop the grandmas in the wheelchairs and search them at the airports.
Yeah.
Because that's really what we gotta watch out for, yeah.
Right, yeah.
No, I hear you. That's infuriating. That, man, that stinks. But, so you have, for people who might be listening on my channel, not to change the subject.
Oh, no, go ahead.
But you have... you're a comedian. You do shows.
That's true.
Obviously, but you have some sort of you have a network of comedians that you work with, or explain how that works.
Yeah. So I run the Social Hour Comedy. It is a sprawling, ever changing amalgam of things. And not only is it the name of this or my podcast, my weekly talk show I've been doing for 10 years. But it's also kind of evolved into a production company. So I produce comedy shows at venues across the country. Currently, I think we're in over 40 venues in 20 states we work with. So yeah. I'm, you know, I book comedians, I produce shows, and it's just kind of something I started years ago because I started doing it, essentially, I kind of started it because I saw the, this is, I mean, long before COVID even, but I just kind of saw the writing on the wall with comedy that, like, man, if you really want to make a living at this, you kind of have to be able to essentially be your own agent and do it yourself. So I just started doing that for me, you know, and setting up my own shows and got sound equipment, go on the road and set up these runs in different states and, you know, and doing, you can't, also doing shows in different areas in front of new audiences is really key to growing as a comic because you're getting different feedback and making sure what jokes work where, what's bullshit, you know, you got to know what's real. Get a temperature of the whole country, you know? So, and I did that. And then a lot of these places were like, oh, well, that was great. We want to do another show. And we're like, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I get, you know, I know other comedians and I started getting them. And then now it's, you know, it's more than a full-time job because I'm booking, you know, I get countless emails a day booking other comedians and I'm trying to book my tour also. And, yeah, it's a lot.
I can imagine that'd be a lot to juggle.
Yeah.
Well, you've turned yourself into an agent. It's what happened.
Kind of. Yeah. To get a bigger cut. No, I mean, it works. I definitely get my beak wet enough to, you know, I mean, pay my mortgage.
Make it worth it.
Yeah. Pay my mortgage and do, you know, take it. It's great. I mean, that, yeah, I got to, I found a way to, you know, I get to make a living doing comedy. It's who, not many people get to say that. So,
yeah, no kidding. Well, comedians are so important. Like, talk about free speech. I mean, if we don't have comedians pushing back on craziness, and free speech being the, you know, the God-given right that lets them do that, we'd be in trouble. Like, in comedian or comedy, the comedy industry. Tell me if I'm wrong. It seems like it's made a real comeback after, especially COVID and years of not being able to say things before then.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's it's definitely, yes. Simple, too long, did not read. Yes, you're absolutely correct. I think the wokeness and the cancel culture stuff is kind of waning. People are tired of it. People are realizing it's, you know, even executives and stuff like that, like people I know who do show produce on shows in Hollywood and stuff like that. Even they've said that a lot of the executives in board meetings are like, we got to do something else. Like, we realize that this woke shit is not paying the bills. Like, it did not pay off like they thought. So they're
sure, go broke, as they say.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they're in it's, it's funny because I remember I've always been a little outspoken and I probably, you know, I've always pushed boundaries a little bit more than your average in comedy, I would say. A little bit darker, a little bit bluer. It just is. I think there's, you got to get people out of their comfort zone, right? And there was a moment somewhere around, I don't know, probably around the start of COVID, right before, somewhere in there, where there were times when I found myself being like, ooh, should I say that? And there were a couple times where I didn't. And then I kind of was just like, you know what? I don't care. I'm like, I'm just going to, it doesn't matter. I go, if they're not, you know, if that one thing is not going to be the thing that makes that person not be a fan of me, they're just not that, I'm never going to win that battle. Like, it's not worth it. It doesn't matter. You know, you can go, listen, go see Patton Oswalt and Tig Notaro. I'm, you know, which, great, fine. They're, you know, they do their thing. I do mine. Whatever. So it's, and I just pushed forward, and it worked for me. And then you start seeing it now, where more of that, you know, you see like Shane Gillis has a show on Netflix now. You know, like that never would have happened even a year and a half, 2 years ago. But they're starting to see like, oh, this is popular. This is, and that's the thing. Here's the thing with the industry too, is that the industry doesn't have morals. They have a bottom line. They will do whatever, they will sell out in a heartbeat if it means that they make a nickel more. They do not have a modicum of actual dignity in any of their bones. Anyone in the that's actually in the like in the entertainment industry as far as like executives and creative people like that. Like the actual artists, you know, do, but the people who are allowing things to happen or not happen or you go on the air, not go on the air, they don't, they, whatever way the wind's blowing, they're blowing that way and trying to catch a buck. That's it.
Well, that's not surprising. But the thing is, that is worthy to know, because just like in COVID and just like any government overreach, if enough people just stood up and said, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be over. COVID would have been over by June 2020 if people would just said, no, we're not going along with your nonsense.
Yeah.
And it, so it doesn't surprise me that that is what is happening, but it is heartening to know that it is swinging back the other way, because there's a market for free speech.
Yeah.
There's a market for comedy. There's a market for people saying what they believe and not caring what people think about them. So yeah. That's good to see.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, people talk about Elon Musk a lot and whatever, but I mean, I think what he's doing is amazing. You know, like I'm a free speech absolutist. If you're either for it or you're not, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of speech I don't agree with. I think it's pretty dumb, but you know what, whatever. I just ignore it. Don't listen to it. Doesn't matter to me. You know, I mean, I'm 41. I've got my ideas. I've done my time. I've done my stuff, you know, like, but also on that note, I'm also open to new ideas. Like I'm open to new information and changing those ideas. And that's what free speech does. It also allows you to know who's got dumb ideas.
Yes.
You know,
or bad. Yeah.
So that, I mean, you can't, and here's the thing, who decides? Like who decides what's in misinformation or disinformation or malinformation, you know, all these fancy words they've come up with to try to censor people. No, you just have to let people talk and you have to give them the autonomy to decide what they like, what they don't. And it's okay, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is what is so foolish about what happened in early COVID when people were being kicked off of platforms for not going along. Like bad ideas, the sunlight is the best disinfectant. Get the bad ideas out there. Get all the ideas out there. The sunlight will get rid of the bad ones.
Yeah.
You know, like it will, you, what happens if you sequester these people away into one corner of the internet, into, shall we say, darkness and not in the sunlight, they're just going to stay there and believe things they always believed.
Right.
Even if it's a genuinely hurtful idea and most of society believes that, get it into the sunlight, let them see, oh wow, I'm wrong on this, you know?
Yeah.
If they are really wrong.
Yeah.
But if they're not really wrong, they'll still continue to believe it. But putting them away in a corner is just the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
Get the speech out there. Let people decide. We're adults. At least a lot of people like you and me want to be adults. So
yeah.
Many people though just want to be safe, and if you're a little kid, if you just want to be safe.
Yeah, well, you know, people just, it's, here's the thing, it's easier to just be told what you're supposed to do and how to live, and it's less scary and it seems less intimidating and you don't have to make any choices, and then you also don't have any responsibility or culpability if things go wrong. You can blame other people.
Yeah.
But that's not life. You know, that's not living at all. You just kind of have to let people make their mistakes, make their choices. I mean, I've certainly had some dumb ideas in the past that I've espoused and, you know, definitely changed my views on those things. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. You know, we've come to a point where we don't allow people to change their mind or become better or better their thoughts or better their opinions. You know, one things said or done. It's like that old episode of The Twilight Zone where, I don't know if you remember this one, but where there's that kid Billy who wishes everyone into the cornfield. Do you remember this one? Where they, and everyone's like, oh no, Billy, you're doing great, whatever, because everyone's afraid of him because they don't want him to be, because if he wishes into the cornfield, they're just gone forever from the little town.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like how it was. They would just like, oh, I just, well, I, you know, I, I wear my mask and I say the riots were a good thing and it was an insurrection because I don't want anyone to know. You know, I put the Ukraine flag on my Facebook profile and everyone knows I'm a good person. And I'm always like, really? Okay, point Ukraine out on a map, then I'll believe you. Until then, shut the hell up.
And those people get the same amount of votes as me and you too.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah, it's a wild proposition. The thing is, what I always say is like in comedy, I've been doing this for 15 years, longer. I've been saying 15 years for 3 years, probably. I've been doing it for a long time in some form or fashion. And, you know, for a long time, you go to these clubs, you're doing open mics, you see new people all the time, and you know a lot of new people are really bad, and a lot of you know, it's just shock value humor, it's bad comedy, it's bad premises, it's hack stuff, whatever, and people get mad and they want to be like, well, we should tell him he can't say that, or we should stop them, or they want to do a show, then they're gonna do a bad show and everyone's thinking, and I'm like, whatever, like, it's not my job to tell someone how to do comedy. This is an art, you know. Either they'll keep doing it and they'll cultivate an audience with whatever they're doing, or they won't and they'll eventually quit and kill themselves like most comedians. They'll understand that this doesn't work, and it's kind of like bad speech. You just eventually, no one is responding to you, and you just
eventually you're alone in a room talking.
So eventually it's like you just kind of realize, oh, maybe that's, you know, but you kind of have to let them figure that out, because if you just shout them down and tell them you're wrong, you're not allowed to get on this platform and say your ideas, and then you watch these other people sit there and say their ridiculous ideas all day, and you're like, wait a second, like, now you're just emboldening these people, and you're lionizing them, and you just have to let people go and they'll figure it out.
Something unfortunately the government doesn't want to do with us.
You take it, like, look at these with the whole riots and like the whole Palestine Israel thing, and they had that congressional hearing with the heads of like Penn State and
Harvard MIT or whatever.
And they were like, you know, is screaming death to the Jews considered hate speech on your campus? And they're like, well, I don't know. Is it actionable? It has to be actionable. And I'm like, I don't know. That's like, you can't be, if someone was on that campus screaming death to trans people, there would be a problem. We would have an immediate problem. That person would be arrested, ostracized. Their Facebook page would be eliminated. They'd never be able to monetize anything on YouTube again. But you can say death to the Jews and no problem. Like, what, you know, it's just gotten crazy how they can justify that also.
Well, again, the inconsistency along with the border. It's whatever the in-group is, they're allowed to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy times.
good times, yeah. Interesting, and I just can't imagine how things will be if Biden wins again. And that's not a reason to vote for Trump. That's just an observation. Like, it's going to... And let me just say, I'm voting for Trump, but he did a lot of crap I didn't like. I mean, sure, he spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't have problem writing checks for things and printing money. Just like Biden. I mean, the inflation that we're dealing with, I firmly believe Trump did some of that too. He was all about the spending during COVID.
Yeah.
So he did a lot of stuff I didn't like, but I'm going along with the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
Like, you not wanting to. And I respect that. I respect you for being able to stick to that. But for me, it's just like, I got to pick him because I don't know. You know, a year later, I'll regret it probably, but oh well.
No, you know, I mean, there's no good options. Do you think he's actually going to end up on the ticket?
Trump?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it would be, yeah, I think it would be too far. Like, you're talking about like an insurrection or riot. Like, this is, you got half the country would be upset at you. Yeah. If they took him off the ticket.
Because, I mean, well, what is, I think his sentencing is Wednesday?
I think it's July 11th, actually.
Oh, is it not?
That's what I heard.
I thought, oh, maybe it's a probation hearing he has coming up. He's supposed to meet with probation on Wednesday before his sentencing.
Oh, really?
Which might be, yeah. So, which is, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I agree with you. I think you would really see... I mean, I don't even know. I don't know what happened. I think they have to know that if you really put Trump in jail he wasn't able to be on the ticket, what that would do to your voters and the nation. I mean, that would be, but again, maybe they want that. Maybe they want, because here, if I put my tinfoil cap firmly on, I think these things give them more power to assert more power. You know, if there's some sort of uprising, then they have the ability to say, well, we should militarize these cities a little more and be able to put more pressure and more regulation. And, you know, just it's another excuse to take away liberties.
Completely. Any excuse they can find, they'll use too. Definitely. No doubt. But, you know, here I am. I'm not trying to be a cheerleader for Trump. Like, don't make me cheer for the guy. But like, he didn't start any new wars. I mean, he continued the one in Yemen, but he didn't start anything new. When he had the opportunity to bomb Iran, some Iranian base, he's like, well, how many people would die? And they're like, I don't know, however many is there. And he's, well, we can't do that. And he wanted to get our people out of Syria and the military politicians who, these military generals are politicians more than they are generals. They just said, nah, we're not doing it. And they just didn't do it. So it's all those things that like, if the most corrupt government in the world hates you this bad, okay, you got my vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my spiel.
That is not a bad take. You know, if the establishment is that much against you and is trying to take you down that hard, you got to know that you are a threat to what they're doing, which is a good thing because what they're doing is pretty goddamn evil.
Just hope that he learned his lessons from the first term. Like if he gets in there and he doesn't do anything different than he did the first time, which is basically trust everyone.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, he has to go in there. And like, not literally, burn it down. Figuratively only.
Yeah.
Not literally.
Yeah.
For anyone who might be listening.
I mean, I don't know. The thing is, I'm so convinced that the, you know, actual ability of the president in power is so limited that I don't know what he could actually accomplish, how much he could actually do. And I think that squeeze of what, you know, whatever you want to call it, the black hand behind everything is like so big and so overpowering now that I don't know what he could actually do without them controlling him or taking him out, you know? I mean, it's like, Jesus Christ, how many, you know, how many of like the, you know, Clinton associates have just randomly suicided themselves, you know, and like Obama's cook that, his chef that just magically drowned in a pond that was so shallow he could stand up in it and not drown. Like, it's these things where like, they just, and people don't even blink an eye at it anymore. You know, they're like, oh yeah, he got eaten by a shark while he was snowboarding. So, you know, and everyone's like, yeah, okay. Yeah. Sounds good. I buy that story.
One of the Clintons had like, a suicide was two gunshots to the head.
Yeah.
But that's a suicide.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there was one of the more recent ones. The guy was, they said he shot himself in the chest with a shotgun.
Yeah.
But they found him hanging from a tree. And where he shot himself was like 30 feet from the tree. So you're like, okay, so he shot himself with a shotgun, dragged himself 30 feet. Well, shooting yourself with a shotgun in the chest is already hard. Then he went 30 feet and was able to hang himself. You're telling me, and everyone's like, seems legit. I'm like, dude, I've only watched an episode or two of CSI, but I think that might be bullshit.
It's calling me crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Seems improbable. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Literally anything could happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, the point is, I feel like that kind of shadow government is so in control that, like, what really is Trump going to be able to accomplish? Not even just Trump, anyone. It doesn't matter who. Like, it's not like there's this golden goose that is going to come in there and be able to beat it. I think anyone who rises to that, I mean, Trump was kind of the wild card because he wasn't in politics, but anyone else who kind of rises up to that level, I think knows the game. They're in on the VIG, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, agreed. It's one reason why I like Vivek. He was kind of outside of it, like Trump was.
Yeah.
But your point is well taken, and I can't disagree with it too much. Like, once you get in there, what really can you do? I don't know. You can just do whatever you want that's extra constitutional and see if they stop you.
Yeah.
Like what Biden does with student loan debt and everything, and just disobeying the courts. Like, they do this stuff all the time. So I'm kind of like, you know what, let's have a turn at this power thing and see what happens. But I'm very weary of that because, like, you can do anything once you get that. So I'm very conflicted, shall we say. My vote for Trump is enthusiastic, but at the same time, I'm like, got another eye. I'm like, let's see what happens.
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of precedents set in the last 4 years about what a government and a presidency and their cabinet can do, you know, whether it be politically or manipulating the legal system. And it sets a lot of really dangerous precedents moving forward because, you know, those people aren't always going to be in power. And when the other side gets in power, and if Trump gets in power, he's, you know, a little vindictive. So he might also utilize that same ability back. And it might be a crazy, crazy swing of things that could happen, you know?
It's going to be a very entertaining next about 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end of the year. It'll be a wild ride. And just get your popcorn and watch, because it's going to be crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. So, all right. Well, that's America in a nutshell today.
We'll leave it on a high note.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Get your popcorn while the country burns.
It's so depressing because I just, you know, people are always like, well, what do you think we should do? What fixes it? And the reality is, I'm always like, I don't think we can. I think the horse is too far out of the barn. I don't think there's a way to turn this thing around.
Agree.
Like, what are you going to do? I don't know. I'm looking at property in Costa Rica. That's what I'm going to do.
When the Federal Reserve was enacted, the horse was out of the barn.
Yeah.
And that was 10, 11 years ago. And then off the gold standard, that was another. Okay, now the donkeys are out of the barn.
Yeah.
Like, it's, we're far down this road. Yeah. This did not just happen.
The barn has been burnt down and they rebuilt it as a Starbucks with no employees. You have to just use a kiosk and then a robot shoves a coffee up your asshole.
Your order's wrong and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's America now. Here we go. All right. Well, Kevin, tell people where they can find you, how they can follow the show, when it comes out, all that good stuff.
Yeah. KevinCrater.com to sign up for actually my newsletter. And you can find all the links there. But wherever you listen to podcasts, The Kevin Crater Show. This is why I can't be in comedy, because that's as original as a title I could make. So
get the point
that's
across.
All I got. That's as creative as I can get. But we do one episode a week on average, sometimes two. Sometimes we might go 10 days. But, yeah, about one a week. So we talk about all the randomness that we just talked about and more. So, yeah, it's All pleasure right. to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad
we got And this. I will put all of your info down on my show too, so people listening to me can find all of your stuff.
Got it. All right.
But you tell them where they can find you.
Well, as for me, guys, as always, go to deetscomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live shows everywhere. Also, keep an eye on my Instagram or Facebook for announcements for this new project. I should be able to give you some details within the next 6 weeks. We're going to hear something, so keep an eye on that. And that's it. Yeah, guys. Or follow me at deece.comedy on Instagram, etc. But that's it. We're going to get out of here for this week. For my listeners, special announcement. Next week, Sophie Tomey, Jeremy Person are going to be back on the show as my former producer and news anchor when I lived in Washington State. They're going to be back on the show next week, joining me for a special episode. We're going to try to get them back more often. So if you've missed the crew being together, we'll be back. And that's it, guys. So for the Social Hour, I've been Deese. And for Kevin, thank you very much. And we will see you all next week.